You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Talent is Overrated. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on Talent is Overrated. What really separates world-class performers from everybody else? By Jeff Colvin. As always, we're going to kick it off with a quote. We tend to think we are forever barred from all manner of successes because of what we were or were not born with. The range of cases in which that belief is true turns out to be a great deal narrower than most of us think. The roadblocks we face seem to be mostly imaginary. End quote. That's Jeff Colvin from Talent is Overrated. So Jeff Colvin is Fortune's editor at large. He's a great writer, and his message in this quick-reading, brilliant book is simple. Talent is overrated, hence the title. If talent is overrated, then what accounts for the successes of extraordinary performers? In short, a lot of hard work, over thousands of hours, over many years. More accurately, a lot of what's called deliberate practice, where we're at our edge and consciously, intensely developing new skills. Let's check out a few of my favorite big ideas from the book on how we can create more outstanding performances in our own lives. The first big idea is the 10-year rule. Quote, the phenomenon seems nearly universal. In a famous study of chess players, Nobel Prize winner Herbert Simon William Chase proposed the 10-year rule based on their observation that no one seemed to reach the top ranks of chess players without a decade or so of intensive study, and some required much more time. Even Bobby Fischer was not an exception. When he became a grandmaster at age 16, he had been studying chess intensively for 9 years. Subsequent research in a wide range of fields has substantiated the 10-year rule everywhere the researchers have looked, in math, science, musical composition, swimming, x-ray diagnosis, tennis, literature. No one, not even the most, quote, talented performer, became great without at least 10 years of very hard preparation. If talent means that success is easy or rapid, as most people seem to believe, then something is obviously wrong with the talent-based explanation of high achievement. End quote. In sum, again, the data shows that talent is overrated. 10 years, or about 10,000 hours of deliberate practice. Whether we're talking about sports stars or x-ray diagnoses, that's what it takes to achieve truly great performance levels. For the record, that's about 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year for 10 years. Next big idea is the Mozart myth. Quote, Wolfgang's first four piano concertos, composed when he was 11, actually contained no original music by him. He put them together out of works by other composers. He wrote his next three works of this type, today not classified as piano concertos, at age 16. These also contain no original music, but instead are arrangements of works by Johann Christian Bach, with whom Wolfgang had studied in London. Mozart's first work, regarded today as a masterpiece, with its status confirmed by the number of recordings available, is his Piano Concerto No. 9. Composed when he was 21. That's certainly an early age, but we must remember that by then Wolfgang had been through 18 years of extremely hard expert training. End quote. So Wolfgang Mozart was born a genius, right? Just kind of fell out of the womb and started composing crazy great stuff, right? Might want to rethink that one. First, consider the fact that Mozart's dad, Leopold, was a famous composer who literally wrote the book on how to teach children music. He'd been practicing for years with Wolfgang's older sister and got to work with little Wolfgang around the time most little dudes are getting potty trained. Long story a little shorter, when you look at his career, you'll see that, as Colvin points out above, Mozart put in 18 years of remarkably diligent training before he created something truly extraordinary. As Carol Dweck, the Stanford researcher and leading authority on motivation and achievement, asks in her great book, Mindset, check out those notes, she says, quote, is it ability or mindset? Was it Mozart's musical ability or the fact that he worked till his hands were deformed? Was it Darwin's scientific ability or the fact that he collected specimens nonstop from early childhood? End quote. I repeat, talent is overrated. Long live hard work. Next big idea is know where you want to go. Quote, step one, obvious yet deserving a moment's consideration, is knowing what you want to do. The key word is not what, but knowing. Because the demands of achieving exceptional performance are so great over so many years, no one has a prayer of meeting them without utter commitment. You've got to know what you want to do, not suspect it or be inclined toward it or be thinking about it, end quote. Well, there you go. Step one, know what you want to do. There's no way we're going to put in the necessary work without this clear picture. For me, the highest level answer to the question is that I want to be an extraordinary human being. I want to live in integrity with my deepest values, to be a great husband, father, friend, creator, teacher, and leader. Specifically, I want to master wisdom. I've created my life such that I get to do that full time, and I'm excited to spend the years and decades necessary to achieve a high level of mastery and, hopefully, to create more and more meaningful goodness for people. Back to you. What do you want to do? Next big idea is, you might want to press pause and think about that one, reflect on it, journal, etc. When you're ready, we'll come back to, they all knew it, but... Colvin outlines research done on violinists at the Music Academy of West Berlin, where professors were asked to rate their students into three basic groups. One, students with a chance to go on to become international soloists. Two, students not quite that good, but still pretty awesome. And three, students who would likely go on to become music teachers. Researchers got all kinds of data on these students. One of the most significant findings? According to Colvin, quote, by age 18, the violinists in the first group had accumulated 7,410 hours of lifetime practice on average, versus 5,301 hours for violinists in the second group, and 3,420 hours for those in the third group. All the differences were scientifically significant, end quote. That's really powerful. Colvin points out the fact that all the students knew that practicing by themselves was the most important thing they could do to improve their skills. They also all agreed that it wasn't particularly fun. But, as it turns out, only the top two tiers actually practiced on their own a lot. As Colvin says, they all knew it, but they didn't all do it. This is a theme we talk about all the time. Whether we want to become musical geniuses or just better human beings, we need to do the things we know are best for us. Period. Michael Beckwith talks about how discipline can turn into blissipline, and says this in his great book, Spiritual Liberation. Check out the notes. He says, quote, the gift of self-discipline is that it has the power to take you beyond the reasoning of temporary emotion to freedom. Think of how empowered you've felt on occasions when you haven't given in to the I don't feel like it syndrome and honored your commitment to yourself. What does not feeling like it have to do with it? The combination of love for something with the willingness to do what it takes to practice it, discipline, results in freedom, end quote. I love that. So let's decide on what's important to us and then do it. Next big idea is practice and napitations. Quote, practice is so hard that doing a lot of it requires people to arrange their lives in particular ways. The two top groups of violinists did most of their practicing in the late morning or early afternoon, when they were still fairly fresh. By contrast, violinists in the third group practiced mostly in the late afternoon, when they were more likely to be tired. The two top groups differed from the third group in another way. They slept more. They not only slept more at night, they also took far more afternoon naps. All that practicing seems to demand a lot of recovery. End quote. Love it. My hunch is you've seen the same type of pattern in your creative life. Personally, it's amazing to see how much more creative work I can get done when I start my day writing before I allow myself to get online. But much like the violinists doing their challenging practice earlier in the day when they were fresher, I find it much easier to write earlier in the day, and I'm much more likely to get awesome creative work done if I start with the first thing. How about you? How do you start your day? Do you hop online and watch your day dwindle away in reactive activities all day long? Oh my God, I've done that way too many times. Or do you have clear goals on what you want to achieve and discipline yourself to crush it before you let the day get away? Powerful thing to ponder, huh? I'm now writing a note to myself, remember this, and put it into practice way more often. All right, back to the show here. Oh, one more thing about the sleep and naps. I've got a big yes to that. Not that I really needed it, but I feel fully justified in taking what I call napitations. That's nap plus meditation. In fact, that's another correlation to my highest productivity bursts. I tend to rise with or before the sun, meditate, move, work hard, take a napitation, and then get back to working hard. It's kind of like almost creating 2 days in one. I'm now writing another note to myself to do this even more consistently as well. So there we go. Napitations and practice. The next big idea is deliberate practice. Quote, deliberate practice is characterized by several elements, each worth examining. It is activity designed specifically to improve performance, often with the teacher's help. It can be repeated a lot. Feedback on results is continuously available. It's highly demanding mentally, whether the activity is purely intellectual, such as chess or business-related activities, or heavily physical, such as sports. And it isn't much fun, end quote. After presenting that definition, Colvin proceeds to focus on each of those elements in his chapter, What Deliberate Practice Is and Isn't. Get the book for more details. In the meantime, know that simply showing up and, quote, practicing isn't gonna cut it. Think of a recreational golfer who goes to the driving range and practices for an hour or so, versus the professional who goes to the course and deliberately, intensely, and passionately works on improving their game. The next big idea is comfort, learning, and panic zones. Noel Ritchie, a professor at the University of Michigan Business School and former chief of General Electric's famous Crotonville Management Development Center, illustrates the point by drawing three concentric circles. He labels the inner circle comfort zone, the middle one learning zone, and the outer one panic zone. Only by choosing activities in the learning zone can one make progress. That's the location of skills and abilities that are just out of reach. We can never make progress in the comfort zone because those are the activities we can already do easily, while panic zone activities are so hard that we don't even know how to approach them. Identifying the learning zone, which is not simple, and then forcing oneself to stay continually in it as it changes, which is even harder, these are the first and most important characteristics of deliberate practice. End quote. That's great stuff. We talk about something similar in the note on Tal Ben-Shahar's great book, Happier, where we describe the zones as comfort, stretch, panic, with the stretch zone being our ideal place to grow. I love to imagine a rubber band held between your pointer fingers on your left and right hands. If you don't pull at all, there's no tension. It's the comfort zone, not a whole lot of growth. If you pull too hard, you'll snap the rubber band. That's the snap zone. Ouch. The ideal? Stretch it so there's some nice dynamic tension. Not too much, not too little. The stretch zone. Ah, that's where we want to play. Begs the question, where are you playing these days? And that leads us to the next big idea, great innovations and roses blooming. Quote, the greatest innovators in a wide range of fields, business, science, painting, music, all have at least one characteristic in common. They spent many years in intensive preparation before making any kind of creative breakthrough. Creative achievement never came suddenly, even in those cases in which the creator later claimed they did. Whether it was the resistor or the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album or the cell phone, it always followed a long earlier period of extremely hard work. And in most cases, the creative products themselves were developed over a significant period. Great innovations are roses that bloom after long and careful cultivation. End quote. What a beautiful image. Again, we like to kid ourselves that great innovations just pop up out of nowhere into the laps of born geniuses. But alas, that simply isn't so. As Colvin so beautifully says, great innovations are roses that bloom after long and careful cultivation. Next big idea is falling on your butt 20,000 times. Quote, a study of figure skaters found that sub-elite skaters spent lots of time working on the jumps they could already do, while skaters at the highest level spent more time on the jumps they couldn't do, the kind that ultimately win Olympic gold medals, and that involve lots of falling down before they're mastered. End quote. Colvin tells the story of Shizuka Arakawa, who won the gold medal in figure skating at the 2006 Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. Apparently, she rocked some crazy move called a layback Ina Bauer, which basically required her to bend backward, quote, almost double with the feet, pointing in opposite directions, leading into a three-jump combination. Now, when most of us watch something like that, it simply looks impossible to do. And for most of us, it pretty much is. But Shizuka, who won the gold at 24, had been training for 19 years, consistently pushing her edges, falling down again and again and again. Colvin calculated the number of times she probably fell and says, quote, landing on your butt 20,000 times is where a great performance comes from, end quote. So back to you. Are you playing it safe and doing what you're already good at? Or are you pushing your edges, willing to fall on your butt 20,000 times en route to your own personal greatness? Next big idea is, what do you really believe? Quote, what do you really want? And what do you really believe? The second question is more profound. What do you really believe? Do you really believe that you have a choice in the matter? Do you believe that if you do the work properly designed with intense focus for hours a day and years on end, your performance will grow dramatically better and eventually reach the highest levels? If you believe that, then there's at least a chance you will do the work and achieve great performance. But if you believe that your performance is forever limited by your lack of a specific innate gift, or by a lack of general abilities at a level that you think must be necessary, then there's no chance at all that you will do the work, end quote. Carol Dweck's Mindset is essentially an entire book dedicated to exploring the scientific underpinnings of this question. What do you really believe about greatness / genius / excellence? She's discovered two different perspectives we can have, a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. As she says, quote, believing that your qualities are carved in stone, the fixed mindset, creates an urgency to prove yourself over and over. If you have only a certain amount of intelligence, a certain personality, and a certain moral character, well, then you'd better prove that you have a healthy dose of them. It simply wouldn't do to look or feel deficient in these most basic characteristics. End quote. That's the fixed mindset. And here's what she says about the growth mindset. Quote, in this mindset, the hand you're dealt is just the starting point for development. The growth mindset is based on the belief that your basic qualities are things you can cultivate through your efforts. Although people may differ in every which way, in their initial talents and aptitudes, interests, or temperaments, everyone can change and grow through application and experience. End quote. So, what do you believe for yourself, for your kids? Check in on that. If you're stuck in a limited, fixed mindset, but want to step into a fuller expression of your potential, study and learn more about how you can make the shift. And the good news is, know that these philosopher's notes are pretty much all about helping us do exactly that. And for the record, one of the reasons I work so hard on all this goodness is because I need to remind myself of these truths and firmly establish myself more and more consistently in the glorious growth mindset. All that leads us to the final big idea, we can all become better. Quote, the evidence offers no easy assurances. It shows that the price of top-level achievement is extraordinarily high. Perhaps it's inevitable that not many people will choose to pay it. But the evidence shows also that by understanding how a few become great, anyone can become better. Above all, what the evidence shouts most loudly is striking, liberating news. That great performance is not reserved for the preordained few. It is available to you and to everyone. End quote. Whether we feel called to dedicate our lives to achieving greatness or simply to become better and better human beings, as Colvin tells us, what the evidence shouts most loudly is striking, liberating news that great performance is not reserved for the preordained few. End quote. Great performance is available to you and to your kids, to your friends and to your family, to everyone. So let's embrace this potential within ourselves and everyone we meet today and go out and get a little bit better, shall we? Yeah. Well, there you go. There's a quick look at Talent is overrated. Let's wrap this up by looking at a bio of Jeff Colvin, suggesting some notes you might like, and then looking at the sidebar quotes. First, Jeff Colvin, Fortune's senior editor at large, is one of America's most respected journalists. He lectures widely and is one of the regular lead moderators for the Fortune Global Forum. A frequent television guest, Colvin also appears daily on the CBS radio network, reaching 7 million listeners each week. He co-anchored Wall Street Week on PBS for 3 years and lives in Fairfield, Connecticut. That's from the book. If you like this note, I think you'd also really like The Talent Code, Mindset, Why We Do What We Do, Spiritual Liberation, and Wooden. All right, let's look at some of the great quotes from the sidebar here. These are all by Colvin, unless I mention otherwise. He says, no matter who they were or what explanation of their performance was being advanced, it always took them many years to become excellent. And if a person achieves elite status only after many years of toil, assigning the principal role in that success to innate gifts becomes problematic, to say the least. Next quote is, the New Yorker's music critic Alex Ross sums up much of the recent scholarship on the miracle of Salzburg by saying, quote, ambitious parents who are currently playing the Baby Mozart video for their toddlers may be disappointed to learn that Mozart became Mozart by working furiously hard. Next quote is, they all knew it, but they didn't all do it. One factor, and only one factor, predicted how musically accomplished the students were, and that was how much they practiced. The work is so great that it seems no one can sustain it for very long. A finding that is remarkably consistent across disciplines is that 4 or 5 hours a day seems to be the upper limit of deliberate practice, and this is frequently accomplished in sessions lasting no more than an hour to 90 minutes. Their framework isn't based on a simplistic practice makes perfect observation. Rather, it is based on their highly specific concept of deliberate practice. The innovator seems driven to learn as much as possible about the domain, to improve, to drive himself or herself beyond personal limits and eventually beyond the limits of the field. The most eminent creators are consistently those who have immersed themselves utterly in their chosen field, have devoted their lives to it, amassed tremendous knowledge of it, and continually pushed themselves to the front of it. Everyone who has achieved exceptional performance has encountered terrible difficulties along the way. There are no exceptions. That is the final quote for this great note. Talent is overrated. Hopefully a great note. Certainly a great book. Talent is overrated. What really separates world-class performers from everybody else? We now know it's hard work, specifically deliberate practice. Hope you enjoyed it. Here's to tapping into your greatness and the greatness of everyone around you, everyone you love, and everyone in the world. Let's go out and rock it. Hope you have an awesome day. Look forward to sharing more with you soon. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.